kind of 9 a.m. It's a little bit after 9 a.m. here on January 9th, 2013. You're listening to Good Morning Atlanta, sponsored by World Trade Center Atlanta on Business Radio X, a proud 2013 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at atlantadowntown.com. I'm Dana Barrett, and normally someone else chimes in at about this point and says, and I'm Elizabeth Gordon, but she's not here yet, so we can make fun of her. She's on her way. 2013's getting off to a slow start for us here at the station. So, you know, it's all right. It's all good. We're having fun. I've got three guests in the studio with me today. Justin Hahnemann, author of Be Extraordinary and Vice President of National Retail Sales for Coca-Cola. Welcome to the show.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure. And last minute guests coming into the studio with like a day's notice, which we love, is the Sagamores. Two of the four Sagamores are here. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Dimitri, and I'm panicking. I'm like, it's too early for me.
Dave T.
And Dave. All right. Tulips, not tulips. Tulis.
Right on.
All right. So we're going to have a good time this morning. And we had a last minute sort of getting into the building at the last minute. We're all rushing in. I had to change from my bedroom slippers into my shoes in front of everybody. It's very embarrassing.
It was impressive.
You know, we're all here. That's what matters. And I didn't even get you guys coffee or water or anything. I'm a horrible host. What we normally do on this show, for the listeners know that, but we normally go through the headlines a little bit in our own sort of fun little way. And we enjoy your comments as well, my guests in the studio. So we're going to start our little news rundown, and then we'll get into what you guys are doing and why the heck you're here with us. A couple things going on that I thought were interesting. We kind of try to stick with the business headlines, and I don't know what part of town you guys live in, but one of the things that looked interesting to me, because I used to live up in the Roswell area, is that GM has paid $18.5 million for a Roswell Technology Center, and it's the location where the giant UPS campus used to be, and or I guess is still, but isn't nearly as giant, I guess. I'm not sure exactly. I haven't been up there in a while, so I haven't driven over there and taken a look at it. But anyway, kind of interesting that GM is coming in there, and it's going to be about 1,000 jobs is what they're saying. So that'll be pretty interesting. The only time I ever drove over there was to actually drop off a package. So
1,000 more people that can listen to the Sagamores.
That's right.
That's right.
And read Be Extraordinary.
Yeah, exactly. That's it.
That's right.
Well, you know, they had a large presence here in the past up off of 85 and 285. So it's nice to see them coming back into the market.
Yeah.
Opening a new facility.
Yeah.
It's pretty big.
I mean, we like anytime there's new jobs coming, it's all good. Except when you think about the traffic implications and that Warsaw Road area up there in Roswell, Alpharetta kind of ish, it's going to be a little more crowded.
Oh, yeah.
But that's okay. One of the things I used to like up there is you would drive. I used to work near there, and I used to drive up there in the morning, and there would be like a train of UPS trucks, you know, one after the other pulling out of the facility, and you just kind of felt like you were in a UPS parade, you know? It's kind of awesome.
They're all freshly washed and sparkly, too.
Right. Smiling drivers waving, and yeah, it was great. Okay. I also pulled out, and I don't know if I printed it. Oh, here it is. The company Teavana. You guys know Teavana from the mall. Are you tea drinkers or coffee?
Very familiar with the brand. I'm more of a Diet Coke guy.
Yeah. Well, we're talking beverages. I am too, actually. I love my Diet Coke. Yeah. Though I do like coffee, and I brought up another beverage story just for you.
Oh, perfect. Did you
bring
some?
We like gifts in the studio. We got a t-shirt.
Yeah, there is a cafe out here, though. You could probably go grab one.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so Teavana has been acquired by Starbucks. So I know they'll never be able to acquire Coke in any way, shape, or form, but Starbucks would really like to control everything you drink, I think, because they've now – I think it's kind of sad because, you know, you think of all these brands as separate, and they do maintain separate brand identities, but sometimes. But they own – did you know they own Seattle's Best Coffee, too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's a little sad, I think, in a way. You know, I appreciate it as the owner of a company like your Seattle's Best Coffee. You grow your company to a certain point, and then you have an exit strategy, and somebody buys you, and it's all good, right? But I don't know, as a consumer, it's a little sad. But yeah, they have Evolution Fresh, La Boulange, Seattle's Best Coffee, Tazo, and now Teavana. Yep. And I think Teavana got started in the late 90s, and it's local here. So
that's right, based in Atlanta.
Yeah, and I think they're kind of right in Buckhead, if I remember correctly. Yeah. And so good for that guy.
I think it's great.
I want to say, I could be making this up, but I want to say he had kids that my daughter knew. I don't know. Anyway.
Did they also specialize in little freestanding mall little shops in the mall.
They do. Yeah. I don't know if that will, I assume that'll continue.
Yeah, I would think it gives Starbucks some new, you know, locations, and then also bring in some brands and maybe some, I'll say some beverages that they don't necessarily have in store today.
Right.
So that was the play.
So it'll be interesting to see how much they combine the two and how much they keep them separate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been talking several times on the air. We talked about the fact that Starbucks has started advertising on TV, which is something they never used to do. Starbucks was like, you saw their signs, you never saw them advertise, very rarely. I think they supported them. I mean, they spent money, but it was so subtle. Now they're like flat out doing TV commercials and web commercials and all kinds of things. And one of the big things they're promoting is that coffee maker at home. I don't even know what it's called. So obviously the advertising is not working on me, but I wonder if they'll sell those in the Teavana store, because that seems like a good fit. It's a retail product, you know, so it'll be interesting to see if that happens.
But what about something that's close to a lot of us now, you know, ecology? What about the little single serving coffees that we get?
Kind of like the Keurigs?
Yeah. My daughter, who's in fourth grade, she's really environmentally conscious. I don't think that would go over well with that generation.
Well, it's interesting because I have to tell you, I love my Keurig. If that Keurig had a couple other little things, I would marry it. I love it that much. I love it. And I don't really, frankly, I care about the environment, don't get me wrong. But I don't care enough to give up my single cup coffee. Because I used to make a full pot of coffee, you know, in my Cuisinart, whatever, every morning, and waste it. I would end up, first of all, an hour later, it's like old and stale and doesn't taste good. And I would be throwing it out. You have to clean that thing every day. Boy, that Keurig, you just pop that little thing and push the button and bingo. I love it. However, you can buy those, you know, you can buy a little insert for those where you don't have to use the prepackaged coffee.
Now I'm listening.
Yeah, you can do that. Then they range in price. I think you can buy them for as low as $10, the little insert. And you just fill it up with your own coffee. So you can still use those machines. You just have to clean that then. So it adds a little step. But the environmentally friendly people can still enjoy single cup coffee.
That'll work.
Yeah, there you go. And I'm quite sure Starbucks will come up with something similar for the same reason, because they're certainly aware of that.
Yeah, I think the Keurig brand's pretty strong. And they're owned by a company called Green Mountain up in Vermont. And
okay, I wondered what the relationship was.
Yeah, they certainly have, you know, they're the known brand in that space, but I think others are probably following.
Emerging.
Yeah, emerging, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, my other drink story for the day, just for you, is a study was done. I love these studies sometimes, because I don't know if you guys remember, we're probably all in the same ballpark of age, I don't know. But I remember back in the day, you know, growing up, it was like, bacon is bad, it will give you cancer, no bacon. And then the next year they're like, yeah, bacon's fine. No peanut butter, though, peanut butter will give you cancer. You know, it was like some big story every year.
Or eggs or milk.
Right, it was always something. Something is going to, and soda, whatever, something was always going to kill you, right? And but then the next year somebody else would do another study and reverse it. But those were big stories at the time, because we had, what, three news channels or something and nothing else. And that's all they could come up with to talk about. And now these stories, they still come out. They just get buried. They don't hit the top of the headlines as many, because there's just so much else to read nowadays. But this one popped up for me and I just think it's silly. So this is what it says. Drinking sweetened beverages may be linked to depression.
Look out, Coca-Cola.
Yeah, no comment.
This is just for you. I told you, I brought it up just for you. Yeah. Drinking sweetened beverages may be linked to depression. However, as we discussed coffee may actually lower the risk of depression.
So sweet coffee.
So if you drink, here's the deal. I think what it really means is if you just drink a lot of Diet Coke, then if you have coffee to counteract it, you're good. You can just walk around hopped up on caffeine all day and you'll be fine.
Isn't that what we pretty much do all day?
Right.
That's what I do.
There's no question. I mean, it's not a day that goes by that there's not another article that comes out on, you know, whether it's soft drinks, whether it's food, beverages,
right,
snack food, candy.
When they said no bacon, I thought that was it. Life was over as we know it.
You can get bacon in ice cream now, too.
You can get bacon in anything now. Yeah. Bacon flavored everything. Meanwhile, I want to tell you this. In the same story, like two paragraphs down, they did say there are a lot of skeptics regarding the sweet drink news.
Right.
And in fact, a neurologist said there's actually far more evidence that people who are depressed crave sweet things than there is that the sweet things cause any kind of depression. Just thought I'd mention it.
And the sweet things make them happy.
Right. They comfort them and they make them feel good. And then, so if you're sad, go have a Coca-Cola. Just saying. All right. One of the things I love to do on the show is lists. I just love top 10 lists for the same reason, and that is that they're completely stupid and that you can pretty much put anything on a list and somebody will think it's awesome and report it as news. And so that's what I'm doing. I love it.
Bring it on.
And yes. And this one is kind of a looking forward into, I think it's sort of from to 2012, but looking into 2013, the 10 most stressful jobs. People are looking out ahead. What's going to stress you out this year? What kind of jobs? Top 10 most stressful jobs for 2013. If you had to guess the top number one most stressful job, would you guess radio host?
Absolutely.
I would not guess radio host.
I don't think I would have selected.
Yeah, radio
that.
Host doesn't even make the list.
No.
What do you think the number one most stressful job? Any guesses? Just guess one. I'll see if you're even on the list of the top 10.
Well, I would think someone in law enforcement would be up there.
You are good.
Oh, that's a good one.
I'll tell you where that falls in a second. You got any guesses?
I would say construction.
Construction. All right. And?
Psychiatrist.
You know, I don't know if that's stressful because you should sit around and talk to people and see how messed up they are and feel really good about yourself. I don't know how stressful that would be. Depends on where you work, probably.
Absolutely.
So all bring right. on the list.
Here's
Let's
the list. Top 10 most stressful jobs of 2013. Meanwhile, by the way, Elizabeth Gordon making her way into the studio.
I'm glad.
She's slightly frazzled this morning. It's all right. It's all good. We're hanging out. We didn't even turn you on. Hold on.
At least three red lights to try and get here.
You ran three. Oh, did you get a ticket?
But I did stop at the fourth one.
Oh, that's nice. I'm glad. I'm sure the police appreciate that.
I hear a siren in the background.
And I stopped for several pedestrians, so I'm very Atlanta. Right?
Did you have to clean off your grill when you got here? Anything? Any small animals or whatever that got in your way? All right. Top 10 most stressful jobs of 2013. Number one on the list, enlisted military personnel.
That's a good one.
Number two, same category, military general. Number three, firefighter. Number four, and having seen the movie Flight, I can imagine. Number four, commercial airline pilot. Number five, public relations executive.
Whoa. That's interesting.
I know. How did that make the list?
How
like,
is that stressful?
You're fighting fires, you're flying airplanes, or you're dealing with, divas. I don't know how that makes the list.
No, it's dealing with corporate crises.
Oh, okay. Oh, good point. Like the Chick-fil-A public relations people, that's probably pretty stressful.
That's a bad call to get.
Yeah, that's probably pretty stressful. Okay, number six, senior corporate executive. A little stress there. Number seven, I don't get this one at all, photojournalist.
Oh, I'm one of those.
So you get it.
Oh, it's hugely stressful.
Is it? Because you got to hurry up and get the thing before it's over? Or what's the deal?
The pressure is so great on you, Dana. You have to come back with a photo every single time, the storytelling picture. It's imperative.
Okay. All right. I get that. So you can't just like, oh, there wasn't anything. Sorry.
You're running
around town looking for what went wrong that day.
Okay.
Oh, you'll get a call. Why didn't you get that picture? Every other wire service has it.
Oh, wow.
Where is it?
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm with you. And right along with that, number eight, newspaper reporter. Number nine, taxi driver. And number 10, police officer. So no.
That's a good guess.
No authors on the list. No people playing in bands. No morning show hosts. None of that. So we should all be pretty.
Why we're all so relaxed this morning.
Aside from the immense amount of caffeine that I've had, I feel pretty good. All right, moving on to one last little story here, and I'm not going to go into this one in great detail, but I like gadgets and techie sort of things. They're fun, and who doesn't? Yeah?
Definitely, no doubt.
So there was a report in the Atlanta Business Journal this week about the tech trends for 2013, and they just mentioned some of the things that are kind of looking into the future, what's coming, or what's sort of almost here kind of thing. So I'm just going to mention a couple of them because I thought they were cool. So mobile payments, I think we're already getting used to a lot of that. But they're talking about not just the like swiping off your phone that you can do now to collect money from people, but the technology where you'll be able to just use your phone as a credit card. So that's...
Yeah, I would say that's near the top. I spend a lot of time with retailers, and that's absolutely a big priority this year.
And it's coming. It sounds like it's really... The technology exists.
The Square app that fits on your iPhone,
right.
iPad. You see Google Wallet, PayPal, all... The list is lengthy.
And the thing to me, and I know Elizabeth and I have actually talked about this on the air before, it's where are you in terms of your age and your ability to adopt these new technologies? Right. Like, how much do you trust that they're going to work and that they're not going to lose get your identity stolen? Or especially when it comes to money. It took me a long time to this is so silly, but it took me a long time to be comfortable depositing checks straight into the ATM. I would use the ATM, but putting a check in there, like, without, like...
You're okay taking the money out.
Well, handing the check to the teller, I felt like if they did something wrong, I could go back and look that teller in the eye and be like, I gave it to you.
Right. But there's several points throughout the transaction where the buyer, the customer, kind of, like, gives their total trust over to the supplier, the vendor, the company they're doing business with.
Right.
You have to make sure you handle those points with the utmost care to make sure that customer experience doesn't get you in those doubtful states where you're like, no, I don't want to go there.
Yeah. So I kind of avoided it for a long time. But then when they started printing the copy of the check on your receipt, I was like, all right, I'll do this now. I'm good.
Yeah. What about when you try to withdraw money from a bank? Have you ever been shorted like a 20? What do you do?
It happened. I think it happened to me once, and it was long ago, like when earlier in the technology. And right. How do you prove that? You can't. I mean, you have to. They take your word for it, hopefully.
No.
Well, you know, I think that fear also comes because our generation was like guinea pigs.
Right.
And we were so burned so many times.
Right.
A card got swallowed or this happened
right.
and nobody knew what to do or even fix it. And so here we are now being introduced to all this new technology that we simply just have to trust it.
Right.
Don't worry about it. It works.
Right. But then, of course, our kids are like, oh, what? No problem. Of course. My daughter was like depositing checks in the ATM way before me. And she was like, what is wrong with you, Mom?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are some businesses, though, that are going to force the change. If you look at – if you fly Delta and you buy anything in air, on air, you're not going to be paying cash. I mean, you can only use credit card
right,
now
exactly.
or pay with phone. That's coming. Mobile payment. Yep.
Yeah. All right. So moving
right,
on.
Because the economics of doing business that way are just so attractive
totally
for
agree.
A company that the companies are like –
oh,
we've
yeah.
got to help
no doubt.
Have people adopt this change
yeah.
because we have to go in this direction
yep.
for our profit model.
So I will say when you talk about airlines, it's kind of funny because you know how they instituted, not in every airport, but many now have the kiosk where you're supposed to be able
yep,
to just go
course.
Check yourself in. And it doesn't entirely work because the knuckleheads who aren't like tech savvy and who like don't travel very much, like get in there and they're all freaking
sure.
out and frazzled and they go to the thing and they can't figure it out and they don't know which credit card they used and they, you know, and then they're like, and they end up having to get in line anyway. So it's, I don't know. I feel like that hasn't fully worked at this point.
Or they can just check in at home online.
Right. And I mean,
right.
And
so you got to like filter your like power users and
oh, yeah.
your.
That's what they should do. Like
your expert
users.
Travelers. Yeah. That's right.
They just need lines like stupid people over here, smart people over here. Good. And you just, you know, self, you know.
Right. Self but having like multiple means of doing it
absolutely.
Is how you kind of self select
right,
which system you're going to follow.
Yeah. I love
are you
going
to check in at home and not even mess with the people
yeah,
in line?
Yeah, I'm checking in at home now. Those kiosks.
Yeah.
You
no.
know, once again, it goes back to being that guinea pig and being burned
yeah.
so many times.
Right.
That
right.
rather be at home doing.
Yeah, how many times you get to the kiosk and you're like, okay, dude, really, where's my reservation?
Although
come
it was
on.
Interesting, you know, because here you can use your phone with the
yeah
your like it
as your boarding
scan
pass
your phone
right.
as
sure.
a boarding pass. But I tried that in Singapore, did not work. They have not adopted that technology.
Oh,
yet.
Nice.
Yeah.
How about if you hand your phone over and they're going to scan it, but maybe something's on it that you didn't want them to see?
That's
so there's privacy concerns.
Yeah, well, who knows? That's then you start getting into like, well, maybe they're scanning it, but they're also like
well,
downloading
not, like,
all your porn off your phone.
Album. You just
nice.
Like, flash them the
right. They let you in for a whole other reason.
Right. Here, take a look at my trip.
Right. All right. So mobile payments, ubiquitous sensors. You know, that's kind of interesting. What they're talking about is how, you know how you used to take your temperature with a thermometer that had mercury in it, and now it's a little tiny computer, right? And so they're saying that technology, they're going to be able to start using to measure all kinds of things. So, you know, temperature and conditions outside and whatever, they're basically going to be able to have these sensors everywhere that measure like water pressure and all kinds of things with these tiny, tiny little computers. So that's not as fun and interesting, but it's there. Wearable computers.
Mm.
Is another big one. People, I've heard several stories about this. They're working on glasses, essentially, that you're going to be able to look up
yeah.
and see all your BS that you look at on your phone in front of your
Google
eyes.
Google has
a Google glasses or
that,
something.
Yeah.
I'm so not looking forward to that.
Like people are bad enough now, totally zoned out
yeah,
their phone,
looking
walking
at their phone.
Down the sidewalk.
Yeah, exactly.
Like if they have glasses on.
I mean, I will say this. The one nice thing is that like I do have a neck ache from constantly looking down at all my technology. And so looking up will be nice. On the other hand, yeah, like people are just blankly staring because they're actually not looking at you. They're just like they're actually watching Netflix in their glasses instead of and you're talking to them. And then, you know, like that. I don't know about
that. That could get annoying.
That could get really annoying. Anyway, portable medical records, 3D printing, online education, and my most favorite of all, private spaceflight.
Oh, yeah. Let's do that. I think it's going to be affordable pretty soon.
Well, that's kind of what they're saying. They're saying that's the whole reason it's kind of – because obviously spaceflight's been around for a while, but it's not really accessible for most people.
Right. And, but you're hearing more and more like celebrity people with excessive budgets for such outlandish expenditures doing it.
Yeah.
So I think that in another 10 years, you'll probably see it come down to more of a
– like a touristy
affordable
thing you can take
right
here. Yeah.
High income.
Right.
Luxury.
Yeah. Honey, this year we could get on our yacht or we could take a space flight. You know?
I would go to space. Being weightless would be awesome for just a little while. There's a spaceport being, I think, either being built or talked about being built here in Georgia on the coast.
Huh.
Did y'all hear about that?
No.
It was an AJC article over the weekend. It was really cool. And Georgia has a lot of aerospace jobs, so that's a good thing.
That is
definitely
probably one that I'm going to skip. I mean, I nice like the idea of space, but I get carsick. I'm just saying, that would not be good. Like however many miles from the
trip
ground. Yeah, I'm like, okay, we're just going to pass on that. All right, let's move on to our lovely guests and talk about what you guys are up to. And Justin, let's start with you.
Sure, sounds great.
So we want to talk about the book. Is that what we're here to promote today?
I don't know. What should we talk about? Yeah, book? Well, we can talk about music. We can talk about
how they mix
together. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, so Justin is a real interesting character. This is, your fourth book?
Second book, and then I've put out two albums and about six singles.
A lot of stuff that you've done. So you're, you've worked for a lot of big companies, and you've had the experience in consulting and managing projects at many large, successful Fortune 500 firms, shall we say. I mean, what's your background?
Yeah, so I've been at Coke now 9 years, and I actually lead new business development for retail in North America. And believe it or not, there are plenty of retailers out there, chain retailers, that do not sell Coke products today, and so that's what my team does. But
That is sort of amazing.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
There's room for expansion, really.
Yeah, so when you find Coke at checkout, like at Home Depot, coolers there, TJ Maxx, you've seen coolers there. That's in our specialty retail team. But I put out my first book about 3 years ago on personal branding. It was called Make It Happen, and that was my first foray into the book world, I'll call it. I'd done a lot of blogging beforehand. And then just over the last 6 weeks, launched the new book called Be Extraordinary, Crush Mediocrity and Spark Curiosity. And I'd say this one is a much more leadership-oriented book or personal development book, coaching, mentoring, that kind of thing.
Right. So what made you – I mean, obviously, working at Coke, you probably see a lot of what extraordinary is.
And a lot of what a mediocre is, probably. Probably see both, right?
I think within any company, you have extraordinary and you've got mediocre, and you've got some folks that maybe aren't performers, and you're going to find that in every business, whether it's a 20-person business or 20,000.
Yeah, I wasn't calling out Coke.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
No, not at all.
I honestly think we have a great organization.
No. I think what I really meant is just that no matter where you go, it's like anything. There's people in all different headspaces, no matter what company you're at, no matter what part of the world, you know.
Well, it is interesting you bring that up, because I do think it starts at the top with leadership, and I am a strong believer that the leader sets the pace, and I write about this actually, that the leader sets the pace and the leadership sets the culture. So if a leader brings on a bunch of 8s, 9s, and 10s, think of it, leaders from a scale of 1 to 10, and that will then cascade down through the organization, versus if you've got, I'll say, a mediocre to weak leader, and we've all seen leaders that we think are maybe more middle of the road, 5s and 6s, they're going to bring on other 5s and 6s and 4s and 3s, and inevitably the organization's going to suffer. And in a big company, the challenge is that cycle, when that happens, takes a year or two to work out. It's not, you can't just change out one person. It's got to go through the whole organization. So I think we're at quite frankly, I've seen some great things happen because of good leadership at Coke and elsewhere.
Can you bring 5s and 6s up to 8 and 9?
I think that's a great question. So I think you can move 5s and 6s to 8s and 9s, no doubt. The challenge is, do you do that or do you go bring in 8s and 9s? So like there's that balance, right? And then you have individuals that are just not the right people on the team, right? And I've seen that not only in this role, but in my consulting days at Ernst & Young, North Highland, and whatnot. And you've got to make decisions on the right people, right? Are they the right people for this job? And it may just be that they're not performing because it's just not the right job for them. And the, that
know,
could make that,
that one of the things
challenge.
That I think is kind of sad about that is I've been in positions myself, and I've certainly seen it happen to other people, where you come into a company and you're like gung-ho, super excited, really want to contribute and participate, and you end up with a manager that doesn't really understand you or get you or,
yep.
you know, or it isn't exactly the right position or whatever.
Sure.
And you end up going from an 8 or 9, sliding down to a 5 or 6 because you're just like.
There's nothing worse than working for someone who you don't respect, appreciate, or that you just, you know, that where there's a problem in the relationship. It's not set up for success.
And it's sad for the company because it's like you've got a talented person, and if you could just put them in the right spot, they could really perform for you.
No question.
And that's unfortunate. I think sometimes that happens, I feel like, more often than not.
Yeah.
Justin, one of the other things you've got in the book is this chapter on the art of self-promotion, which
yes.
I found really interesting because yep. I think that working in corporate dynamics is all about how does the company perceive me? How am I building and assimilating the right champions around me who are going to pound the table for me when it comes time for promotions?
Yeah.
How do people do that without becoming that obnoxious, self-promoting?
Arrogant person, yeah. So I wrote that chapter after I did an intro for a Network of Executive Women event that was called The Art of Self-Promotion. So just a little bit of background on where the idea came from. And I think it is an interesting challenge because you have to walk this fine line between appearing arrogant and overconfident, right, in what you've done or accomplished,
like,
or what you're doing.
This was amazing.
Right. But there are so many things you might be doing in a given day or week or month that people just don't know about. And even your own manager. I mean, in most companies now, teams are not all located in the same building or on the same floor. They're located just all over the place. It could be across North America, for example, in my situation. So you really do need to focus on how you can self-promote, or at least make, or I'd say almost build awareness of the things you're doing so that your leader can then take that and help you grow in your career. Or also to make others in the organization know what you're doing so that they may be thinking of you for the next role. And
right.
that's kind of all part of self-promotion.
Well, and it's increasingly challenging today because of the way that because of technology and more jobs are autonomous, more teams are virtual. So you're not sitting
exactly.
all down together, and you have to build that awareness without sending 8 million emails to people.
That's right. Yeah, no doubt. I think that's a big challenge. And so there's a trust factor that's involved. And another aspect of the book I write about is trust and the importance of trust in any relationship. And with a virtual team or a team where people are not located in the same place, trust has got to be there between the team and the leader. And then there's got to be a process in place for that leader to know what all is happening with their team so that they can then be their biggest advocate in the business or biggest advocate in the company.
You know, self-promotion is just interesting on so many levels because it's sort of like what we're raised not to do. You know, like you don't want to, you're not raised, like if you're too braggy growing up, your parents
right.
are like, stop that. Shut up already. Like you're
be
too
humble.
Braggy. Yeah. Be
yeah,
humble.
Be humble. And I totally
modest.
Agree with being humble. So let me just build on that because we have musicians. Well, I'll actually listen to do a lot of music here. And how else are you going to grow your following in the music world? And if you don't have a major label, for example, without doing some self-promotion,
of course.
And how else are people going to hear your music or your lyrics or your product or get your product without doing a newsletter, without doing performances, without self-promoting?
Right.
There's no other way to do it. And very few, you know, small percentage of bands and groups actually are picked up by major labels and then find huge success from it. And I'd say even more find success in writing, songwriting. We can talk about that when we get to the music piece of this. But anyways, so self-promotion, I think, is a huge part of that.
Well, it's almost like we should be teaching, like if we could revamp like college business courses or even high school courses or whatever, there should be a class on how to do that well. Because you're right. You have to do that certainly in music. You have to do it if you're entrepreneurial.
That's right.
There's no other way to get business but to say, hey, here's what I do and I'm great at it. Come hire me.
You know, and the title of that, it is an art. It's an art form on how to do it so right where you don't appear to be
pushy
so
or
self-promoting
yeah.
where it's where you just rub people the wrong way, where it comes to the
totally
point where
right.
I really don't want to see you. I've had enough of you.
Right.
Even
right.
before they have a chance to get to know you
right.
because of the promotion.
Right.
So there is that fine line. And absolutely, it is an art. Yep. And you're correct. We should be having classes in the universities and in high school about the art, about how to do that.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
You need to be comfortable standing up in front of a group of people and being able to let them know what you're all about, don't you think?
Yeah.
Totally agree.
So because you are also a musician, right, you've had the hands-on experience of this. Talk a little bit about your music and
I started writing songs, I guess it was 6 or 7 years ago. When I played piano growing up and singing and whatnot, but I really didn't get into any sort of formal music until when I had just started working at Coke. And started with writing country music and wrote a number of songs for my first album called Saturday in the South, and wrote the title track that was picked up by CBS and Fox Sports and used on College Football Game Day every Saturday.
That's fun.
That was really cool.
Awesome.
It's almost validating. But
yeah.
So what I found about that is once you've written one song, it fuels and you see there's an emotional impact, or you see how someone else takes it and really either accepts it or doesn't like it. There's something really cool about that, and
like
you can see
the reaction.
Yeah, the
that
creativity
they have
has
to
an impact.
Your creative work,
right? So that fueled. I moved over into contemporary Christian music, and then now where I am is no more albums. It's just all about singles, and that's the world of music today. And it may be a pop single right now, which I did. I wrote a song called "Be Extraordinary" around this book, and then the next one could be a Christian rock song, and then maybe if I get an idea for country, I could bounce back to that. So my whole thing is, because I don't have a major label, I'm my own label, so I can do what I want. I can write what comes to mind. So music is a great outlet for me, and I used it to raise some money for charity, my first album.
That's a great segue to the Sagamores, because
yeah,
you guys do some of that too, right?
We do.
We're all about giving back to the community and making a difference and also having some fun.
Well, exactly. That's the best part.
Well, most people involved in music, I think, are up to having some fun. talk a little bit about you guys, how you got together, the name of the group, and your favorite sort of charities to work with.
Well, we met. Our daughters were in third grade then, Gigi, Lauren, David's daughter, and also the other member, Frank Fletcher, who couldn't be here with us today. His daughter, Olivia, all were in school together. I hadn't played in some 20-some years. I used to, I'm from New Orleans, played in a high school band down there in the music scene. And we had a reunion show coming up, so we all got together, and I got a little spark. And met up with Dave and Frank, and then we started just getting together and
now,
playing.
Who plays what?
Dave plays the bass.
I play bass guitar, and actually, interesting story how I got started. My daughter, Lauren, who's in fourth grade right now with Gigi, Demetrius' daughter, she wanted to play guitar, okay? And I said, well, Lauren, if you play guitar, Daddy will play bass. So I just pulled it out of thin air and got going with it when she was in pre-K, and then Demetrius and I hooked up with Frank out in front of Sagamore Hills Elementary School, and so the name of our band, the Sagamores, is for Sagamore Hills Elementary School.
Yeah. Well, it's also the area that we were living in.
Absolutely. It's the neighborhood. We have a lot of good community involvement, and actually a lot of musicians live in that neighborhood. There's a band member from Kansas that lives nearby, and Tinsley Ellis, a great blues musician, lives over near us. So
there's something about
rock and roll. Yeah.
Our good friend Earl Whittington, who wrote a song that James Taylor picked up, "Shower the People," he lives nearby. He's going to actually play with us on Saturday at our CD release party at Jerry Farber's side door this Saturday.
Sounds like a blast.
And we should say that again. You're going to be where, doing what, when?
Jerry Farber's side door on Saturday.
This Saturday.
This Saturday, the 12th.
I was going to say, what's the date? The 12th, okay.
At 7:30. Jerry Farber's is attached to the Landmark Diner over in Buckhead.
Yeah, of course.
Right. And Jerry's been a long-time Atlanta comedian. And actually, I had the pleasure of meeting him quite some time ago as a photojournalist for the AJC, which I spent a lot of time in Atlanta doing photography. So he's excited to see us over there, and we're excited to be there. And we have a self-produced CD.
Love it. That's great.
Now, I have a connection with Jerry, too. I love Jerry. Jerry's obviously a stand-up comic, and I took his stand-up comedy class many years ago
did
a little stand-up myself. But we won't be practicing that today.
Well, I'm sure that he would like to see you there on Saturday, and I'm sure that we could find a little room for you to do your stand-up.
I don't know if he would remember me.
The show with a little skit.
There you go. I would be completely unprepared, but I don't know if he would remember me. It's been so many years, but you know, when you're the teacher, of course, everyone remembers you.
Of course.
You know, I'm just one of many students, so who knows. Plus, I actually look a lot different than I did then, but we'll talk about that off the air. Okay, so talk about the kind of music you guys play.
Oh, wait, we forgot, and we have to mention one more band member, Josh Copeland, who at that point when we started playing, there was a big gap. There wasn't a drummer, and we were playing, we were just getting together playing some cover songs. And then we decided to start writing our own material.
Awesome.
Hadn't written in, as I said, 20-some years. That doesn't date me, does it?
No, what are you, like 25?
Exactly.
You started writing at an early age.
I did. And so we hooked up with Josh Copeland, who really, younger guy, really gives us that youth that we needed, and a great, great drummer. And we started just writing our own songs, and he had us on a schedule of one song a week. So we started doing
Perfect.
That enough to get ourselves at least one set, and we've started developing and all collaborated writing together.
That's
and
awesome.
We have different influences. I used to play in a ska band in New Orleans. So we have ska, we have country, we've got
some
rock
blues,
and roll.
Got some rock and roll. Frank,
that's cool.
Frank Fletcher,
like
our lead guitarist, is a rock and roll
scholar. Don't say historian.
Scholar. Now I was going to say aficionado is what I was going to say. And you know, he takes some of his chops from Stevie Ray Vaughan and Tinsley Ellis and the Rolling Stones. And I get a lot of my bass background from some blues. And I started playing bass with some guys at the AJC, the Journal Constitution. They wanted a bass player. And we started playing a little blues. So I brought some of that blues background to the Sagamores. And I would say our beat is a driving, deep driving bass beat with some gritty vocals. And some,
I guess take the Velvet Underground, put them on steroids.
Nice.
Right on.
Sounds awesome.
I have a couple of your tracks that you guys sent in email. I'm going to see if I can pull one up and play a little bit of it in a minute. But
wow.
I don't know how skilled I am with the technology over here, so it may or may not work. We'll have to see. But how often do you guys perform?
Well, we practice once a week, and we recently didn't perform because we wanted to concentrate on getting the recordings done. Once that is done, then, you know, we all have busy schedules. So then now we're planning ahead. We try to do 1 to 2 gigs a month.
That's awesome.
At, you know, at least to get us out there, keep us fresh. Mm-hmm. But we're able to at least practice once a week.
That's great.
And when we get out and play, like the first time we got together, we played basically reopened Club Famous, which is in Northeast Atlanta near Toca Hills, which is Sagamore neighborhood.
Okay.
And we got together and we raised some money from t-shirt sales. My brother has a business in Atlanta, and he does embroidery and shirts, and we got these beautiful Sagamore's shirts, which I'm going to give Elizabeth right now.
Very nice. Wow.
I already got mine, Elizabeth, before you got
it.
Yeah.
And so
the money that we get from the shirts, we go ahead and donate that back to the PTA at Sagamore Hills Elementary School.
Yep, that's awesome.
And from that first gig, we were able to work with the school and got their support. And interestingly enough, another father in the Sagamore community also had another band called Frenzy. So we all got together and we did this benefit, which we raised $18,000 for the school.
Wow.
So together that year, and what we've done with this last one, it's been over 20-some thousand that we've raised.
It's about 25 grand so far. You know, these guys outfitted a whole – did you tell them that they –
I didn't.
We outfitted – basically, we helped get enough support together and raise enough money to outfit an entire room full of brand-new Macintosh computers for that elementary school.
That's amazing.
They did not have any.
That's great.
That is amazing.
25 big screens, and I wish I had one myself.
All right. Now, when you guys were, you know, 18, 20 years old, did you ever envision that you'd be kind of in the burbs playing with a bunch of dads?
Well, put it that way, no.
Just teasing.
Our daughters think we're so cool.
Living the rock and roll dream.
I know.
What are
Why
you
not?
Talking about?
I know. Justin, do you perform?
Yeah, I lead worship in my church every Sunday for kids programs, and that's my biggest outlet right now, which I really enjoy. And then,
so the kids think you're really cool too.
It's a total blast. Kind of like you guys, you find satisfaction from, you know, giving back and
absolutely.
And I like you said, the songwriting piece is so huge too in terms of just connecting with others. So, and then here there are different events. So, for example, this upcoming week I'll be singing in a retail rock and roll event with a bunch of guys that all come together from all over the country. And it's just, I love doing those types of events. It gets you creative. It gets you out of your typical singing zone.
So wait, is that a public event? What's the details on that?
It's up in New York. It's not here in Atlanta. It's in
New
York.
Well, we have our listenership. And,
that's right.
If they're in New York Monday night, there you go. BB Kings.
It's global.
I guess great. Global listenership. We have gotten, oddly enough, some emails from people in very odd places.
We're big in China.
That's right. That's right. Do you guys feel like being musicians kind of on the side impacts your business lives at all?
Oh, I think it's I think it is something that going back to the art of self-promotion, I think it for me it has given me a lot of it's a great stress release.
Yeah.
And it really helps me concentrate on different tasks at hand.
Yeah.
You know, taking this one side that it can be fun and pleasurable and then being able to go into your business mode. So it's not a Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde at all, but it helps it's a good release. Let's just say it. It's a good release, good stress reliever that, you know, I can have my coffee in the morning and then have Coca-Cola in the afternoon.
<There you go. laughs>
For me, I really like seeing the expressions of people in the audience that are enjoying our music.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, we were on stage at Club Famous not long ago. I looked out in the audience and people were bebopping and moving around. A couple of folks got up to dance, which was really a kick in the pants to see.
Yeah.
And, you know, spending most of my life behind a camera, you know, a lot of people think photojournalists, you know, they hide behind their gear and everything. And that's true to a degree. But I personally have never been that bashful, as you can probably tell right now. but it's an interesting, for me, it's an interesting dichotomy. It's two totally different worlds.
Yeah.
I never envisioned, Dana, I never envisioned myself being a musician when I was growing up.
Yeah.
You asked that question. Absolutely not.
Didn't even occur to you that was going to happen. Yeah.
No. But my old man, my dad, had a music store here in Atlanta quite some time ago called Music City. So back in the day, that was when they were like, I don't want to say how old I am, but like they were hippies on 10th Street and stuff like that. They had free concerts at Piedmont Park.
But, wow.
But I didn't really get that much musical background. So to me, it's so cool. It's like learning a new language.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I think as, you know, I don't want to say hobbies because that's the wrong word, but as passions go, I guess, when you're doing something that requires almost like your full brain to do it, I think it's a great thing for a balance in your life. You know, when I'm here on the radio with you guys, I'm not thinking about anything else but what I'm doing right here and with you guys. And I'm
Absolutely.
Not thinking about all the other things I have to do during the day. And it's a completely different thing. Like when I'm just watching TV, my brain is wandering off to like, oh my God, I got to write that document. I got to call this person. I got scheduling. Like you don't fully engage in that. So your mm-hmm. brain is still working.
Absolutely.
But when you're doing music or performing or whatever in any kind of, you know, outside extracurricular activity like that, I think it's so good. In terms of balance, I just think it's, I think everybody
sure.
should find something
well,
like that.
Especially because corporate life is so left brained.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yep. I think most businesses, and what happens is you grow up and you do all these creative things, right, when you're a kid. But then when you go to college, you start getting into this regimented, I'll say, process or space. And then afterwards, you join the business world. If you do that right out of college, then you're constricted by HR processes and procedures and kind of, you know, you're pursuing the business side of things, which is very green and blue or process and numbers, right? And you just, over time, your creative side just doesn't get fed or you're not fueled because at work you're typically not in a creative role. Most people are not in a creative role.
Yeah.
And I think what's really cool about doing whether it's writing a book or writing music and singing and performing is you totally bring something much different to the team. You are interesting because you have an outlet and you have made the time and found somehow able to balance family and work and doing these other activities. You guys practice once a week. I mean, that's pretty cool. And that's not easy because of scheduling and right. Everyone's got to be there. And but in the work world, it's so cool to be able to bring that to the table. It's different. You're interesting.
Yeah.
And people want to know how do you do that? Because it does allow you to be, I think, a better performer.
Yeah.
Right. And ultimately a better business person.
Absolutely
because
agree.
You've got a more balanced point of view and
Definitely.
Perspective to
well,
bring to the table.
You're also thinking creatively.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're inspiring. You're getting that going.
Naturally. And what company doesn't need innovation and
That's
creative
exactly.
thinking right
Absolutely.
Now?
And you bring a lot of those social skills together too. With we talked a little bit earlier with Justin about self-promotion and how to be an extraordinary person. And so you really have to come and think about what are your attributes and your assets and what are the band's assets and
Totally.
How we
can
share
imagine. Yep.
Yeah, with the community.
Well, I also really love that it's like you guys have kids or you're working with kids and whatever, because, you know, when you think about now I'm going to date myself, but when you think about like the, you know, Wall Street world of the 80s kind of, you know, where it was all about, you know, daddy's leaving for work at 6:30 in the morning, coming home at 11 o'clock at night. And all he does is work, work, work all day, or mommy. And, you know, that's the example you're setting for your kids, that that's what life is about.
Right.
And now, no, we're saying no. We're, you can have a job. You can play music. You can write a book. You can kind of do whatever you want to do, and you can do it all at the same time. Look at this.
You
and still be normal.
You
and exactly. You know.
Can be who you want to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is that the resources are there now to put together your own albums, to do your own recording on, you know, Apple hardware and software, to do your own editing, to put out your own book. I mean, there's so many resources that now are available that were not there in the past.
You're right. And also, just down the street from us, Georgia State University has a stellar music program, and so does Kennesaw, as well as the University of Georgia. So folks who are educators, like my wife Lisa, have, you know, sort of turned me on to the fact that there might be life beyond this in the music world professionally, you know, to help the next generation get going.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that can bring up a whole other topic, which is just about arts and school and how that's going, you know, kind of by the wayside, and how awful that is. And, but, you know, I guess the flip side of that is we have to pick up that baton at home a little bit.
Well,
you know,
that's also kind of what we've done as well. By we've, in this last one, we were able to raise money for the music department. So
yay.
That's pretty cool.
Love
so,
that.
So exactly. Instead of it being cut back, let's, you know, let's get that involvement with the parents. And if this is something, a little bit of something that we can do, to put on a show, people come out, we raise some money, we get some instruments for the children, we get some art supplies, we really, you know, focus in on the arts. Why not?
Why not?
Let's help out.
Yeah. We could do a whole show, you know, on the importance of arts education for kids, you know.
Absolutely.
So we need arts education. We need to teach people how to self-promote. We have a lot of work to do, you guys.
So speaking of self-promotion, let's make sure that our guests, that we've given all the right information. Justin, where can people buy Be Extraordinary, Crush Mediocrity, Spark Curiosity? It's a mouthful.
It is, but that's the idea. So all is located on my website, Hahnemann.com. You'll find all my music there, my blog there, my books there. It's kind of the platform. You can go there. And obviously, the book is available in every major online outlet, like iTunes to Amazon. But if you just want to keep it simple, Hahnemann.com.
Awesome.
It's easy.
Yeah.
And you guys?
Well, we have the Sagamores.com, which will be up and running here very shortly.
Okay.
We will be playing at Jerry Farber's Side Door this Saturday at 7:30.
And that's our CD release party.
Awesome. That'll be a blast.
Will you be taking mobile payments for the purchase of your CDs?
Absolutely.
All
and
right.
Of course, we'll have T-shirts for sale.
Awesome.
Some of that will benefit the school.
Yeah, the T-shirts are pretty sharp, I have to say.
Nice. Yeah.
They are.
I like it.
I like
solid.
It. They
are.
Definitely.
Very nice. Nice. Color pink in front of us.
I'll be sporting this all around town, running red lights.
Oh, God.
There you go.
Oh.
Almost matches your shirt.
Great promotion for the band as Elizabeth, like, mows people down on the road. Go Sagamores.
And we'll have, what, 7 songs on the CD?
It's
Demetrius?
A little 7-song awesome. EP, and they'll also be available on iTunes for download as well, which my daughter thinks is so cool.
Oh, yeah.
That is cool. Two of the songs that I have that I think if I push this button, they will play are, one is Where Are You Tonight, and the other is Hey Man. Which one should I try?
Hey Man.
All right, we'll try it. Let's see what happens. See if it works. Everybody cross your fingers. If not, be prepared to keep talking.
All right.
Oh, wait. Wait for it.
Hey Man.
We're rocking out.
Hey man, what you doing tonight? Hey man, won't you give me a ride? Hey man, you think it'll be alright? 24 hours ago. I think it'll be alright.
All right, so I don't want to do that too much because people tune in, they're going to be like, what happened to our radio? Is this a music station now? What's going on? But that sounds really good. I'm excited.
Thanks.
It's awesome.
I'm excited.
Like the beat.
Yeah, I'm excited for the show Saturday. Again, Jerry Farber's Side Door. Can people get tickets online or something, or how does that work?
Show up, right?
Just show up, or at Jerry Farber's, go to the site. You can buy tickets there, and we hope everyone will come out as proceeds of this will also go to benefit the school as well. We need a couple more $1,000 for the music program to get some more. We're going to stand-up bass, we need.
They're looking for a stand-up bass. Not for me, but I do want to try to play it. They're looking for a stand-up bass and some brass instruments, stuff that's kind of expensive, hard to come by.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
But we just want everyone to come out and have a good time.
I'm sure they will based on that. I could be bebopping around to that, no problem.
That's good. We look forward to seeing you all there.
All right. Well, we want to, as always, thank our guests for joining us, the Sagamores, Jerry Farber's this weekend, and Justin Hahnemann, who's always extraordinary. And
thank you.
we'll be back, of course, next week with more fabulous guests. And in the meantime, we want to thank our sponsor, World Trade Center Atlanta. You can learn more about them by visiting WTCAtlanta.com. I'm Dana Barrett.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon. You've been listening to Business Radio X, a proud 2013 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at AtlantaDowntown.com.